Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here today continuing our expectation series. We've been having a lot of fun with these, taking two players and talking through what our expectations are with various analysts around the Baltimore area. We have a really good one in today in Voss from Baltimore Beatdown. Voss, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you for inviting me. Looking forward to the season. Never a dull moment, even in June with these Ravens, it seems.
Yeah, lots of fun, lots to talk about. You know, Lamar Jackson still not shown up. We're recording this on June 9th. Some of these we ought to timestamp because there literally could be some injury issues that happen before this gets aired. But this is our views as of June 9th on the players we're going to talk about today. Today, we're talking about two players, and normally we've gone with disparate players in this, but Voss got in early in this situation. He picked two cornerbacks, Jalen Armour-Davis, who's primarily an outside cornerback, and Damarian Williams, who's exclusively, in my opinion, a slot cornerback. Not really directly competing, so we went ahead and left it as is. But Voss, great to have you here today. Let's talk about these guys. Let's start with Armour-Davis.
Jalen Armour-Davis, fourth-round pick out of Alabama, a player that I thought the Ravens received very good value where they selected him. Really a prototypical boundary corner, height, weight, speed athlete with that Alabama pedigree.
Yeah, he definitely has a lot of things to tell you. He's on the outside. A 4.39 40, so he's got the good long speed. At 6'1", 194, he looks like he has the size to press. Very average length for the position at 31 inches. It's not everything, but hey, arm length is a consideration at corner too. What's really tells he's going to stay on the outside, though, to me is the 7.26 3 cone, which is really unimpressive for a cornerback at all, but really would be terrible for a slot corner.
Yes, not agility is not that his strength. I do think he is pretty good at contesting at the catch point, although he may not have the longest wingspan or arms. Also notably, he was only a one-year starter. He was buried behind Patrick Surtain, the now Broncos ascending corner who they selected very early in the previous draft. The reason he may have slipped a little bit more than maybe his traits suggest is he has had an issue staying healthy. Mm-hmm. He missed parts of his senior season in high school with a knee injury, which also required surgery. He missed his entire true freshman season at Alabama. He also suffered a hip injury last season, which was his junior year, which kept him out for four games, including the playoff run and the national championship game.
Yeah, that was a major loss. And it was his first real playing time was this last year in this junior year, which is I don't know if they call it a redshirt junior year anymore because he missed the season, missed that first season, but probably he would. He's not a young guy. He'll be 23 in September. So, you know, it is one of the concerns about him that I've heard often expressed is that he may have already reached his peak, whereas if you take a 21-year-old corner or a guy who's, you know, either just 21 or he might even be 20 after a three-year non-redshirt college career, you might have somebody who's more special and has more upside.
Yeah, certainly that's true. Although, you know, with limited playing experience, he may be able to improve his technique to some extent. Of course, Alabama, they play a variety of different techniques. Nick Saban obviously is a defensive back guru. That's where he made his way up the ladder to the pinnacle there. He has received some comparisons to Anthony Averett, yeah, which I think is probably a reasonable comparison in some regard. He, Armour-Davis, was a blue chip prospect coming out of high school, the number two player in Alabama, behind only Justin Ross, the receiver that played for Clemson and latched on with KC. What impresses me the most is his recovery speed and click and close ability when playing press man. I think that's probably where he's going to be able to transition the fastest to the pro game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a comparison to Averett is certainly a positive one for Ravens fans. And one of the nice things about Averett's career is something I want to see from Armour-Davis, although it may be difficult, is that he gets an increasing snap count basically every year. And Averett played 65 snaps as a rookie, and that's as I count them, doesn't include penalties. It's a little different. bumped up to about 200 in his second year. And then, of course, you know, last year in his fourth year, he was having significant playing time. The Ravens were really relying on him. That's kind of like a minimum developmental arc I'd want for Armour Davis. Some people would have him jumping in as the slot corner to replace Peters next year, which would be not an unreasonable goal, perhaps, in terms of what he had. But it's the high end of the high end of reasonable as far as you know, how that might play out.
It's very interesting to see how the playing time is going to be divvied up at cornerbacks, particular. Obviously, the Ravens lost Jimmy Smith, Anthony Everett, and Tavon Young. So three, you know, heavy contributors from last year. They brought in a group of players. When you initially asked me to name a couple players, I identified the two rookie corners as well as the two second-year corners, Ardarius Washington and Brandon Stevens, because that was before they had signed Fuller. So I was very intrigued and kind of interested to see who will take on what role, and that still remains to be seen at this point.
Yeah, it is very much up in the air, and there's a lot of competition there, a lot of players who don't know exactly what role they have. Brandon Stevens is in an odd position of being a man without a position right now, and they'll find him one. I think outside corner probably makes the most sense for his skill set and for who the Ravens have at safety. But it's, you know, it's an interesting situation for him. I hope he doesn't continue to bounce back and forth. I don't have that fear at all for Armour Davis. You know, he's an outside corner, pure and simple. That's what he'll be in the NFL. But with Stevens, it's a real question whether he might be moving from safety to outside corner, and even slot corner is a possibility for him.
Absolutely agree with Stevens, particularly. I think his skill set will play best on the outside. Although he made some plays, especially as a blitzer or as even an overhang linebacker last season, as far as coverage on slot receivers, that was not his forte. He was one of the worst marks in the league as far as QB rating allowed into his coverage when lined up as a slot. It's interesting because the roles are blurred a little bit in the NFL now, where some teams use one of their biggest receivers in the slot. It's not all Wes Welker, Julian Edelman types primarily in the slot anymore. Even the Rams, who Jalen Ramsey, some still considered to be the best corner in the league, plays as the slot corner primarily. So I think the Ravens adding this amount of depth and versatility gives them the ability to match up versus a variety of different alignments and different teams that like to do different things.
Yeah, it gives them some choices, but it also has to have them grind through some of these choices. And, you know, it's these players, unfortunately, are not APA cards, or they're not, you know, Stratomatic cards that you can just put into the positions at the time. I mean, they have to be developed into those positions. They have to actually, you know, have time in camp and have time, you know, to learn the system in the way they're going to play within the system. So it's a difficult thing, I think. Let's go on with some goals for Armour Davis in terms of this first year. I want him to be available as either the first or second backup outside cornerback in the event of injury. I think he's probably there right now, but Peters is already, you know, we don't know exactly if he's going to be ready for the season. It's not even impossible that the Ravens would still cut Peters before the season comes up. There's a big cap savings from doing so. I think if they saw outstanding play from their other outside cornerback options, they'd be more incented to do it. And of course, they'd be more incented to do it if they don't really think he's ready to go.
Sure. You know, I personally hope not. I think Peters brings a lot to the team with his ball hawking ability, which is some of the best in league history. And I think there is enough value there to be able to absorb that cap hit. As far as goals for Armour Davis, I would agree. I definitely would like to see him heavily mixed in the rotation. And I think the early reports out of OTAs are he is making some plays out on the practice field in shorts and shells. Obviously, that could change when the pads come on. But I would certainly like to see him involved. If you can find a corner in the fourth round, and develop him, and you have him under team control for the next four seasons at a very reasonable number, you want that player to develop into a key contributor.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just part of basic franchise building. You said it very, very tersely, as you say a lot of things, Voss, and I appreciate that. But if it's gold when you can get a fourth, a fifth, a sixth round pick who not only gives you value on that rookie deal, but gives you value immediately on that rookie deal. It gives you a sense of who he is as a player immediately. And with Armour Davis, it would be one of the goals would be that you see a guy who you can project to be the 2023 starting outside corner, that it gives you the option to move on from Peters if you need to. And by the way, I love Marcus Peters. He will be so effective if he can be the old Marcus Peters within this particular defense in terms of the possibility of having seven really high quality pass defenders and him playing zone coverage on the back end. I just love what he could produce in this system. So I'm not trying to get rid of the guy, but I always want to have the best available options for both injury and for the next year when you don't have an obvious solution at hand.
Sure. And if nothing less, it gives the Ravens possibly some leverage in negotiations for an extension with Peters. I am hopeful that he'll be ready to go. Non-contact ACL should be ready to go in 12 months. Mm-hmm. But we don't know. I mean, he has been on the field. He was around the team down the stretch run last year. He's obviously not practicing yet. I do think his skill set is predicated on instincts and tape study in a lot of ways. So it's, even if he is not quite the agile player that he was, I think his long speed should return with time, and he still should be able to make some plays. Peters, I'm speaking of.
Yeah, he has good instincts, reads the top of the route tree well in terms of not getting juked by receivers as often. And he just makes very good choices relative to the defense being played on that play. And you know, if, for all the things you can talk about Marcus Peters, is, you know, somehow not quite fast enough, gets burned deep, you know, this and that. The things he does for a defense and the fear he strikes into opposing quarterbacks is very significant. It really is. I mean, they don't generally want to throw at him. And a deep Marcus Peters on one side almost like puts an area of darkness on that side of the field that quarterbacks don't like to throw into. So go ahead.
Sorry. No, and just to add on and to tack onto the point you made earlier, now with two safeties that have range, after going years without maybe even one safety that had range, should really play towards the cornerbacks being able to take a little bit more, be a little bit more aggressive and try to snare a few more interceptions, which is an area they really lacked last season in particular.
Completely agree. I mean, the team with their two big moves this offseason, signing Marcus Williams and drafting Hamilton with that first pick, improved their turnover potential immensely. And it won't just be from those two guys. Those two guys, having two free safeties is remarkable flexibility in terms of what it gives you. It's the plus side of flexibility that we always hear about when teams really have four strong safeties, and they're flexible in the sense that they're forced to move those strong safeties around, and they can barely get by as free safeties. But you know, having two guys who really have the instincts to play free safeties and can read the quarterback the way that Hamilton and Williams can is really exceptional, and that should lead to opportunities for Peters to trust that he's covered when he gambles. I mean, I love that thought.
Absolutely. Humphrey as well. I think Humphrey was the victim of just trying to do too much because he didn't trust who was behind him at times, mm-hmm. and just being called no man's land without having somebody with reins behind him. And I think it's going to be very, extremely beneficial to have that range back there. I think it's going to transform the entire defense. Very excited to see it.
All right. Another goal I have for Armour Davis this year is that the Ravens coaches find him a role and a place in the scheme. You know, we talked about this in terms of you can't just have him available to play any one of five positions when you have somebody drop out. That might work for a Patrick McCary, who's more experienced at several different positions on the offensive line, say, but it really doesn't work for a rookie player who has very little experience. It wouldn't have worked for Patrick Queen as a rookie to say, well, we're going to have him fill in outside, inside, wherever we need him as a pass rusher, as a movable chess piece. I mean, with players who still have a lot of football to learn, in particular, they need to find that role that maximizes his skill set, and they may need to scheme for it as well. Which means when he's in, they may have to use more press concepts. They may have to, they may be hesitant to play zone the same way, or they may want to play more, either one, but whatever they deem to be his skill set, and the Ravens seem to be very high on him right now from the early reports in OTAs, then they need to find the way to squeeze the most value out of his talent.
Completely agree with that. Specialization with rookies, I'm a big fan of that. Allow them to master one thing before you're asking them to do something else. I think the Ravens have made some missteps in the past, not doing that with certain players. And Armour Davis is typecast as a outside boundary cornerback, so that should be pretty cut and dry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, typecast has a connotation like there's some other option and he's not being considered fairly and whatnot. He's by physical limitations, he is an outside corner. Yes, so, I want to see from him that he can demonstrate the ability to read NFL wide receivers at the top of the route. It's one of the things Averett actually had a little bit of difficulty in this at times last year. If you look back at that Colts game, they have a hodgepodge of middle of the pack receivers. Nobody really special on that team. And guys like Pascal and who's the first round pick that actually looked pretty good against him? Pittman.
Early second.
Sorry. You know, they were making him miss at the top of the route. And with Armour Davis, you know, I want to see the signs that he processes NFL leverage and you know what these receivers are trying to accomplish with their moves. They picks up on the clues well, even as a rookie, and hopefully he can build on that. But that'd be one of my developmental goals.
Sure. And it's interesting with the Alabama corners, and obviously there's a long line of corners. I think some other pro comparisons coming into the draft was Drake Kirkpatrick, who was a former first-round pick from the Bengals, another long Alabama corner. Some of them just don't quite have the knack for the ball skills, and as you said, at the top of the route, and some do. So it's interesting that a team with that type of track record of producing corners, you still kind of have to, you know, it's a mixture once they get to the league.
Yeah, you think of Alabama as their program effectively has about 20 first round draft picks every year in terms of who they get to select from the college ranks, because they get whoever from the high school ranks, they get whoever they want. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, athletes may occasionally come to them with positional requirements to play there. I think that'd be about the only time Nick Saban would turn down a really good athlete, is if he said, no, you got to play me at outside corner under these circumstances and whatnot. He might say, you know what? I'll find somebody else. But otherwise they get whoever they want. And in a truly non-parity driven college game that we have, not this should be, it's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, now Texas A&M, they pretty much get whoever they want. A few years ago, Alabama actually had a top 100 in the country defensive lineman who they don't grow on trees. They didn't have room to give him a scholarship, so he actually took a gray shirt season for a top 100 defensive lineman.
Wow.
Which I thought was unbelievable, because he could have gone to any other Power 5 school in the entire country and gotten a scholarship, but he really wanted to go to Alabama. So
a gray shirt year means he walks on for that year, or
he walks on for the first half of the year, basically the fall semester, and then a scholarship opens up, and then he goes on scholarship for spring ball.
Huh. I've never heard the term, but that's very interesting that would happen. Got one more goal for Armour Davis that's specific, is that he presses effectively when called on to do so. It really is kind of his calling card as a bigger corner. You know, hopefully this is something that the Ravens can make use of in terms of skill. And that's part of finding him a role that he'll be really effective at.
Sure. For as far as goals, you know, ball production, tracking the ball in the air is something that you want to see out of your young cornerbacks. He had three interceptions last season, did not allow a touchdown, Armour Davis. But to me, the main primary number one goal is to get through his entire rookie season healthy, because mm-hmm. he does have a track record. And as we've seen, when players come into the league and they miss development time that first year, it's hard to catch up. And sometimes those hurt players stay hurt. So avoiding the injury bug and hopefully those lower body injuries are in his past, that would be number one goal for me.
Yeah, 100%. And it's, you know, honestly, health is like one of the goals for every single player in the series. So I haven't typically been doing it, but in the case of somebody like Armour Davis, who has an injury history, it's really appropriate that he, you know, manage himself in a way that helps him not lose this year developmentally, even if he's not playing snaps. You know, he's got to be able to practice with the team the whole year. And, you know, a player like Dalen Hayes has got to be behind coming into this year just because of what he lost last year.
Sure, sure. But the flip side of that is, you know, I think his draft stock was pushed down slightly because of that injury history. So there is some upside there. He probably profiles as a day two selection with a clean bill of health in most drafts.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. All right, let's talk about good and great. Do you want to start us off in terms of what's a good season?
Sure. So I guess two options or two objectives. I'd like to see him work his way onto special teams coverage units as a gunner. He has a lot of experience doing that in Alabama. He was on all of their coverage units. The second one is to play a rotational role. The Ravens have been a little bit unique where they have in the past with Brandon Carr, Jimmy Smith, and Marlon Humphrey rotated their outside corners. Mm-hmm. And every team would like to do that, I suppose, because the other opposition is rotating wide receivers frequently. They don't have the play. A lot of teams don't have the personnel to be able to do that. I would like to see him take, even if Humphrey and Peters are healthy, maybe about a 10 or a dozen snaps a game once he's a little bit more comfortable, to keep those legs fresh and to gain experience. Obviously not in the highest of leverage situations, if you can avoid that. But I would like to see him see some snaps on the field on a per-game basis this upcoming season.
Yeah, I think that those are excellent goals. And I didn't put anything about special teams in, but that certainly makes a lot of sense given his size and what he could contribute. I wanted to have a good camp in preseason. I wanted to practice well, maintain the trust of coaches. I don't think that should be an issue. I haven't heard anything about that. They seem to be glowing early on. Stays healthy to get rookie playing time, avoids losing your developmentally. We already talked about that. Demonstrates he's a better option than Kyle Fuller. That's a big one for me. Kyle Fuller got benched twice last year. He may or may not have anything left in the tank. It's important that Armour Davis, to my way of thinking, is ahead of him on the depth chart. And he'll get there with good practice, good play in the preseason. He can get there with some rotational play, probably. The Ravens are in a potentially good situation for getting a young guy playing time because I think they're going to want to try to handle Peters with kid gloves in terms of getting him out of games that are decided early. So there may be some, you know, fourth quarters where he gets to play the whole time because, you know, Marcus Peters isn't, they want to keep him as bubble wrapped as they can. And, you know, you don't want to have him out there on the field. And then whether or not the opportunity comes to play outside in 2022, I want it to be clear that he's a viable starting candidate for 2023. So that would be my good season. That's a lot of requirements.
Well, I think it's reasonable, though. I certainly think that's reasonable. So I guess we'll move on to my great option. So I actually had beat out Kyle Fuller for the CB3, or I guess CB4, depending on how you want to categorize it, but the third outside corner. Mm-hmm. Fuller, I like the signing. I like adding proven veteran depth at every position when they can. $2.5 million contract, though, is not a sign of a player that is they're married to necessarily. I think they could save about half of that if he actually doesn't make the team this year, because that's the base salary. I'm not exactly sure what's guaranteed and what's not, to be honest. But Fuller did not have a great year last year. He seems to be an every other year kind of player, just briefly looking at completion percentage allotted to his coverage and those sort of things. So if you can have your fourth round rookie come in and take that. That is a boon for the team, short term and long term. A great season would also be generating a few takeaways, whether that be you get your hands on a couple balls and tip them into the air, or you jump a route. You know, maybe two or three interceptions, nothing crazy, but those are really an area of focus for me coming into the season for the defense to work on. I also agree with you that if he shows his ability, that could allow the Ravens to move on from Marcus Peters. I'm not sure if that would be in the team's best interest, but I think it would be in Armour Davis's best interest if he's a starter going into year two. And lastly, I do want him to, if he can, again, show that ability, enable Marlon Humphrey to kick inside on occasion. And I know that's a topic that's been debated, and he's had some of his best seasons on the inside. His skill set projects hypothetically best to the outside. To me, it's more based on a matchup specific, where you're playing a team with a big slot, or you're playing a team that's a very physical downhill running team, where Marlon can go inside on those certain occasions to maximize what the defense could do.
Yeah, absolutely agree. First of all, great set of great requirements, and all those are ones that I would have in there. I said it a little differently. Camp and preseason forces the Ravens' hand in terms of rotational play is one of the things. So Armour Davis is too good for them to just sit him for only relief appearances. So they get some sort of rotational game going with him in some way. And then he takes over the outside cornerback spot if Humphrey is needed inside or if there's an injury, either one. He plays several hundred snaps, and I didn't have a lot of numeric things, but that would kind of be my great year for him, would be several hundred snaps, 200 to 500, somewhere in there. Would be absolutely terrific. He'd get that, gets a trial by fire that has us expecting more and a possible replacement of Peters in 2023. And again, it doesn't have to be a replacement of Peters. If they decide Humphrey's their slot corner and, you know, Peters and Armour Davis are the outside guys, I'd be okay with that too. They have a lot of talent, obviously, to manage there. But him having, you know, us expecting a starting role of him in 2023 is, I think, what constitutes a great year primarily.
A lot worse things than having three starting caliber outside cornerbacks. That's
there
for sure.
There you go. Well, you know, in 2018, Marlon Humphrey won the team MVP award, and he played rotationally. And, you know, you mentioned it earlier in the show, but they, you know, they just found a way to get it done. And I kind of even think that could be Hamilton's situation this year, that it wouldn't be a terrible thing to get him off the field. And, you know, maybe he plays 70% of snaps instead of 100. And Clark still has the green dot, although we heard some things from Harbaugh yesterday indicating that the green dot might have to move based on the quality of safeties. I mean, that's the first really credible thing I'd heard about the risk of Clark losing the green dot if he's still in Baltimore.
I am on the keep Chuck Clark train. I have been throughout. I think I like dime defense. I like quarter defense. Mm-hmm. I like having a strong communicator when you're breaking in a new defensive coordinator on the field. And I think Clark is underrated in terms of man coverage ability on tight ends, as well as an overload blitzer. So and there's very little, if any, savings from moving on for him. I'd like to keep him around at least for one more year.
Yeah, you'd really have to get something for him to make it worth giving up. And, you know, he should be worth a lot to some other team. But the truth of the matter is, you know, the Ravens are kind of specialized in terms of how they play defense, and not every team, you know, wants to bring in a new signal caller. There might be one out there, but I'm not sure who it is. So he can't necessarily help you in that way. And then, you know, if you're using him just as a dime back, you're back to the position maybe where the Ravens are, that he might end up being a dime back and big nickel for them. And if two teams are in the same spot, the Ravens are probably going to value Clark more highly because they know what he can do in that role, you know, personally.
Certainly. So we'll see. I agree. They'd have to get something back and something pretty appealing to me, because this is a team that's ready to contend. I want to be in a position to add pieces, not subtract pieces.
Right. Once again, we're having this discussion on June 9th with regard to Clark's future. And by the time this airs, it may well have changed. And that's just the nature of doing these shows a little bit in advance. Let's move on. Talk a little bit about Damarrion Williams, another fourth round pick taken 141 out of Houston. A smaller guy, 5'10", 183, ran a 4.53 40. Interesting kind of a situation. He only ran once due to an injured hamstring. So you wonder if that affected him on the first run, because 4.53 is darn good. 7.03 three cone is not particularly impressive at slot corner. I don't know the order of drills such that, you know, one might have affected the other in terms of this injury. Very short arms at 29 5/8. That's in the exceptionally short range, even for a guy his height. He's had 33 career games in three seasons, a lot more experience on field than Armour Davis, for example. He's had 3 ints and 23 pass defense career. Has some limited experience as a kick and punt returner. I think it's fair to say that his size is going to create some matchup limitations for him. And I don't see any way he can play other than at slot corner.
Agree completely. Just top line thoughts. Pepe, as they call him, his nickname, Pepe Williams. I was a little bit surprised by the pick. I thought he was a sixth or seventh round prospect. Interestingly, he was taken 12 spots before Tariq Woolen and 16 spots before Zion McCollum, who are two physical freak, upside, long, fast prospects who were potentially day two players. And I guess the Ravens decided that they really wanted somebody that was specifically a slot guy.
Wait, so I assume you guys had some sort of a draft watch party at Beatdown, right? And yeah. So as you were doing this, did a lot of people have Tariq Woolen projected higher? Because that was true on my show. There was a fair number of people were really wanted to see Woolen drafted in the third round, that he would have been a good pick there. And then for the fourth round, there was some building thoughts about him, also about wide receivers, but a lot about Tariq Woolen in particular. Coach Evans really liked him.
Yes. We did a live show and did a few things. I was surprised by that. And then I figured once they took Armour Davis that maybe they weren't, they had Armour Davis higher. I think quite a few people had Woolen higher than Armour Davis. And even some had McCollum. But then again, I mean, the rest of the league was apparently not as high either. So, we'll see how it goes. But I was a little bit surprised to take a slot only player. They actually just released a whimsical video on the team site, and something about a band, the Nickelback, and Williams said, "Oh, that's my position, Nickelback." Because I think everybody understands that he's good. A nickel. But fourth percentile arm length caught my eye. Very undersized. Look at his spider charts. He's pretty much in the 10th percentile for all the size metrics. Mm-hmm. His agility seemed decent, overall agility, according to RAS, with a pretty good change of direction. On tape, he does look pretty fluid. But I do think his recovery speed, makeup speed, could potentially be a problem at the next level. I think he's going to have to acclimate to the professional level athletes coming from Houston, which is in the American Conference Group of Five, not like SEC or Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the Ravens just drafted a slower safety in Kyle Hamilton, who has remarkable read time and instincts, and at slot corner, that's really important. It's at outside corner. You really need the long speed more. You're covering more nine routes there. You've got more makeup need, but instincts critical in the slot. And that's why players like Ardarius Washington, who are a little slower, can still be very effective there, even with a little bit less speed against some of these guys who are very quick with their whip routes and whatnot. And, certainly have good change of direction characteristics themselves on the offensive side of the ball that they have to cover. So hopefully that's where Damarian really shines. And I also think that the Ravens probably looked at his measurables and said, he looks faster than that on tape. And we think there might've been something up at the combine with the injuries. Actually, I'm not 100% sure if those are combine or pro day numbers, but I think they're combine.
Notably, his 10-yard split was 87th percentile. So that was a very good number. So yeah, he does have the quickness, it seems. And I can understand that mentality where you take a more of a high ceiling prospect and then later in the draft, you take a guy with a higher floor. I do think Williams is a higher floor type of player, very experienced. He will turn 24 years old next month. So he's a little bit older. He came from the JUCO route. So very experienced, very seasoned, very tough competitor, just a rugged play style that I think kind of fits the Ravens defensive culture, the AFC North overall.
Right. I think we both agree he's too small to play safety. That's a position he's occasionally mapped to, kind of like Washington. I don't think there's a big danger of it with both Williams and Hamilton now basically ensconced where they are now for the next 4 or 5 years, for 5 years, really, for both of them, that somebody else is going to take away one of those safety roles. But I didn't think it made sense. I Bob Sanders, you know, played as a really undersized safety for years. He got hurt all the time doing it. It's not a combination that I particularly like, is a real small guy playing strong safety.
Well, Sanders was short, but he was pretty stocky, if I recall too. I don't want a 190 pound player trying to bring down Nick Chubb downfield. I don't think that's going to be work out too well.
Yeah, or not too often. I want him to do it when it comes up, but not to be the norm. Yeah. One of the things that looked good on tape to me about Damarrion Williams is ability to find the ball in the air. And you see that in terms of the pass defense and the interception numbers, but it's nice to get some confirmation of it, is that he really looks into the backfield, tries to find the football, likes to play behind the receiver in some cases. And where he can't, off the line of scrimmage, out of the slot, he's also been very good. So I even as a base off coverage guy, I like him from that perspective. He'll get beat by some slants if that's his way of doing business in the nickel and whatnot. But still, a guy who could definitely make plays on the football. The other thing I think is that if the Ravens do some good things around the line of scrimmage to bat some balls up, they're going to have some good interception opportunities in the middle of the field, and they need to start converting those. Damarrion Williams, another guy who projects to do that quite well, to find the football on the air or on the ground and turn that into turnovers.
Sure. As you said, 10 press breakups last year, 3 tackles for loss. On the flip side, unfortunately, he did allow 5 touchdowns into his coverage last year. But then again, he was playing primarily on the boundary. So I think his strength, I think he is a plus attribute for him. And run support. He's not afraid to stick his nose in there, which as a slot corner is pretty valuable. You know, we've seen that from Tavon Young and Marlon Humphrey when he's in the slot. So I think he has the ability to make an impact pretty quickly as a high floor type of player, and really just master that position, which he does. He's not extremely experienced, but I think his skill set translates pretty well to what they're going to ask him to do from that nickelback spot.
Yeah, I agree. And the Ravens have so valued physical corners over the years. The 2000 defense had Robert Bailey. I'm watching that season again, and he's flying all over the field. The 2006 defense had Corey Ivey, and he was with the team for several years. In fact, he moved to the outside to play some when the Ravens were desperate. But he was really best and most effective when he was in that nickel role and a very physical downhill player. So, and Lardarius Webb, of course, didn't get mentioned here, but tremendously physical corner, not just a great coverage guy as he was early in his career on the outside, but when he was playing nickel, was a terrific downhill player. I think they see that in Damarrion Williams, despite the size. And Tavon Young, you know, also pretty darn active in terms of getting to a spot quickly to knock a guy down before his momentum became an issue. Well, you know, these larger mass players obviously are going to turn on Tavon Young and be a problem for him. But the Ravens' love of these physical slot corners has definitely really shown over the years.
Well, I think it makes perfect sense for what they're trying to do. And just talking to my colleague Kyle Barber, who's been out at OTAs and reading some of the reports from Jeff Z and some of the others, he's also had some positive reviews, early reviews. So it's always a little tough to parse out, you know, is the defensive line dominating the offensive line? Is that good or bad for the team? Because they're both on the same team, and the wide receiver group is not particularly imposing at the moment. But it is good to see him getting off on the right foot so far.
All right, well, let's talk about some goals for this year. I'll tell you what. Just to start, I'd like him to compete for the starting slot cornerback role. He's got two levels of competition here. The first is he's got Ardarius Washington, perhaps Brandon Stevens also, who might be direct competition for that role. Another layer would be that Marlon Humphrey could be moved to the slot at the outside corner. Position is the depth holds up there. I personally don't think there's quite enough depth on the outside to force that move. So we'll see how that turns out. But another definite you know, detractor from snap count is going to be the possibility of Big Nickel if Clark is still around. Because to get Hamilton on the field for 70% of snaps, if Clark has the green dot, means committing to a lot of diamond quarter and non-traditional situations. So they're probably going to play, you know, I would think they would threaten the 2019 season, but probably over the 2000 season, which goalposts that between about 34.5% and 42% of snaps in diamond quarter. But then that's still not enough to get Hamilton to 70% of snaps. So to get that, you'd have to play him as a big nickel a fair amount, him or Clark as a big nickel a fair amount. So that will cost the slot corner position snaps, mm-hmm. whereas they would normally play about 90%, 85% of all snaps. You know, it will cost them snaps this year.
I mean, a lot of that's predicated on the offense too, right? If they're mm-hmm. if they're in positive game scripts, then the defense can go to those personnel groupings that create so much havoc. Hopefully they'll be able to. Ardarius Washington, I think it's maybe a 1v1 competition for snaps there. And also Kayvon Seymour, I wouldn't completely rule him out because he does have some special teams ability. And out of all of the, what did Rex Ryan call them, DoorDash drivers last year? I forget if he said that. I forget if he called them DoorDash or Grubhub.
Don't go to DoorDash for backup cornerbacks. That's what he said.
But I think just to speaking on that point, I mean, obviously last year they were hit with the injury bug at cornerback tremendously, but they've added so many capable players. I don't think that's going to be an issue, knock on wood, this year. I think that was a very smart decision by DaCosta and the coaching staff to, although they lost three, to bring in three and also have two more developing. It's exciting that they have the versatility to be able to match up with anybody, whether they play the Bengals 1 week and the Browns the next week, any scheme, any offensive system, any matchup that the opposition can lean on in most games, they're not going to have that ability against the Ravens defense once they get healthy.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too in terms of what this defense could be. If there's one area that kind of scares me a little bit, it's pass rush right now, and pass rush and coverage, of course, are linked in more ways than you can try and disconnect. So it's silly to even try a lot of the time, but they're going to have to generate some pass rush. They're going to have to compromise the pocket in some ways to make the job of the back end easier, even with a great back end. If they quarterbacks allowed to eat a sandwich in the pocket, make a sandwich in the pocket sometimes, you know, are too hard to stop, no matter how great your back seven are.
Certainly agree with that. I think that the interior push is going to be much improved over what it has been for years. They have Jones, Pierce, and Madubuike now, and Campbell. So that's a pretty strong quartet. And also, I don't think it can be understated again what improving the coverage capability of the safety is going to do mm-hmm. as far as taking away that quarterback's hot route outlet valve, which plagued the defense far too often over the last few years.
Yeah, so I think what you're talking about is like using robber concepts or rotational yes. concepts where you come down to the box and eliminate a route that's an easy route for the quarterback. Yeah,
exactly.
I love that too. It's a big thing, and I think they have two free safeties with the instincts to do it. I think Clark can also do it, by the way, if mm-hmm. that's what you asked him to do, but they certainly have the talent there to do it. And I think more than anything, I look at the opportunity to get inside linebackers off the field who have been their coverage weakness for the last, since Mosley left. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's really the biggest thing about this team. LJ Fort was okay. Bynes has been notably better than our other guys both times that he's come in 2019 and 21. And that should scare the living bejesus out of people, because he's not a, you know, gifted coverage guy in his own right. He just has some understanding of passing lanes, and it shows up right away as soon as he comes on the field. Whereas if you have Clark in a will role, or you have Jefferson in a quarter role replacing the Mike linebacker, I think you see a whole different level of the quality of zone coverage.
Absolutely. We're in complete lockstep on that point as far as the inside backers. I'd almost reclassify Tony Jefferson's position to inside linebacker at this point.
If that makes everybody happy in terms of where he is, that's fine. They did that with Levine. And my answer to that is, if he's a sub-package linebacker, only comes in on these specific passing downs, then it's still quacking like a duck for me. So you call it whatever you want. Call him a pineapple if that's his position. But yeah, he's a dime back if he's in that role. It's funny because Dean Pease was at the podium, and Dean was good as a coordinator because he would talk more about what was really happening on defense, and he would afford himself the ability to be sarcastic occasionally about players or even about questions. Harbaugh's very much information hoarder, and obviously controls that very tightly. And Marty Morningweg had trouble completing a sentence, so it was hard to get a lot from his interviews. But Pease was very intelligent, and he would almost spar occasionally with reporters. But I asked him a pointed question about limited dimeback play before I think the 2015-16 season. I'm not sure exactly what year it was, but they played only 3% dimeback or dime defense during his initial years with the Ravens after playing it a lot before. And his response was, "Well, you saw our secondary last year. What did you want me to do?" Kind of thing. Zach Orr had been okay, but the other point he made was Anthony Levine was that year showing up and playing with the linebackers. And he said, "Well, Anthony Levine's a linebacker," and he said, "He's only a sub package linebacker, but he's a linebacker." And it's, I didn't respond to that because, hey, that's not the format where you do it. You don't like verbally spar with these guys. Mm-hmm. But that's my thought is it's quacking like a duck if you're saying he's only a sub package linebacker. Anyway,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Long tangential story. Apologize for that.
No, that was good intel. Dean Pease and the dime defense. I remember those days. back to Pepe here. Where were we? We were on goals, correct?
Goals, yeah.
So I think with his age, 24 in July, you want him to hit the ground running. And I don't think he's necessarily going to be a starter on every snap, but depending on the matchup, I do think, again, maybe that's, 20 snaps a game. I don't know if you had a number in mind, but you want him on the field. And also, if he can carve out a role in special teams, his skill set's not a height, weight, speed specimen, athletic specimen that usually thrive on special teams. But I think he's probably not going to be a gunner or a jammer, but he'll have somewhere he can fit in.
He'll be backup return guy and I think kick return coverage. I don't think he's necessarily a punt return coverage guy because he doesn't really have the – There are limitations. You have a punter. You have five guys on the inside who have to be basically linebacker, tight end size, or bigger because you need to be blocking. You have a personal protector that role is already taken by Jefferson, in my opinion. And then you have two outside guys who tend to be longer, faster guys. It could be a Dillis Thomas or Miles Boykin. It can't really be a short guy on the outside who's gunning. So it's limiting in terms of where he can find work. But as a kick returner, he's a guy who could be L1 to R5. On there in terms of where he would line up, kick coverage guy, that is. And also, he's probably the team's number two kick return guy. Punt return, I think he would be the next guy up in those situations.
Either that or running back, one of the backup running backs. So if Duvernay, this is another tangent, but if Duvernay is taking on an even increased workload on offense, how do you feel like he fits in as far as a returner?
Legitimate question. I'd probably want to get him out of any kick return duties. And there you're talking about a running back is a reasonable guy to bring back, whether it's Tyler Beatty might be the guy. Of course, Tyler Beatty may have too big a role to really put him in there. But they'd use some, whoever is a backup returner or a wide receiver who doesn't have a backup, sorry, a running back or wide receiver doesn't have too big a role is the guy you want returning kicks. Returning punts, I think you want a more dangerous player. And there I would see Williams as being a kind of natural backup to Duvernay. And I don't have any problem with Duvernay having that role as well as his wide receiver role.
I agree. I think he brings enough to the table as a punt returner. Teams are punting less and teams are running kickoffs out of the end zone less. So that what he brings there is worth the risk to me.
All right. So I've got a couple more goals. I want him to develop proficiency defending bunch formations, which we see a lot in this division and particularly from Pittsburgh. But we also see it in some of the conference flows like Kansas City. There's a lot of pick and rub routes that are run in the NFL and they are run, with NFL size wide receivers who have a way of getting in the way. and are pretty good at doing. It's not like these concepts don't exist in college. They do. But with him playing more outside corner at Houston and, you know, moving to the slot, it's something he's going to have to contend with more, is how he avoids getting rubbed off a route really quickly. And I thinking back to Tavon Young's rookie season, one of the big plays was early in the season. He got tripped up by Weddle. It was actually Weddle's fault, but trying to cover OBJ on the winning touchdown at the game at the Giants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the one where Jimmy got hurt in the first half, if I recall.
Yeah, and I think I want to say that Tavon got hurt on that play, that might have ended his season or it might have shortened it. I can't recall the exact outcome. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it was a touchdown.
yes, instincts are in communication against those bunch formations, as you said. That's certainly a place that they're going to have to spend a lot of time and get a lot of reps in with the new players and the new defensive coordinator to figure out the best way and the rules for those situations.
I've got another goal here. I want him to contribute to the pass rush and the run defense both. So those are things nickel corners have to do other than just cover. To do so, he probably needs to play bigger than his size as a downhill defender. I think the thoughts are he fits into that and can do it. But the quicker we start hearing comparisons to the other undersized Ravens nickels who played very well over the years, you know, Tavon Young and Webb and players like that, the better. So looking forward to that.
Sure. Yeah, I do think that's going to be, especially the run support, I think that's going to be somewhere where he makes his mark relatively early based off what I've seen on his college tape.
All right. Other goals?
That's all I had for goals, more for the scenarios now.
Okay. Go ahead with a good year then.
Well, first of all, he has to make the 53. And I don't think that's 100% given, maybe 95% chance. But when you look at it, he is in direct competition with Washington, perhaps for the final cornerback job. I think they're probably going to carry six corners into the regular season. And it may come down to those two. They're probably the two lowest guys on the poll. But also, just a good season would be to dress on game days for more than half of the game days. You don't have to put a specific number on it. He's probably, if he's not, doesn't have a huge role on special teams, it could really just depend on the matchups. So just sort of non-specific general goals as far as the good scenario for me.
Okay. I had almost the exact same thing, literally almost the exact same thing. I'm going to read mine out just to show this, but gains the trust of the coaches with practice habits and quality camp preseason. That's one maybe important additional thing. Makes good use of the year developmentally. Frequent game day activation. Again, I don't want to put a number on it. 6, 10, 12, whatever it is good. Obviously, the more it is, it may be more based on injury than anything else. That he plays some as a rookie despite the heated competition for slot corner snaps we've talked about, and he carves out a special teams role. So that's a relatively modest set of goals. I do think his position is in a lot less jeopardy than we may think. The NFL changed their rules recently to only allow, let's see, what is it now? 4-week requirement for being out on IR, but you can only have 8 per year, which is the more significant thing. So the Ravens, you know, with their roster, and they certainly have accumulated some players in Urban and Mike Davis who are handshake deals waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. Tony Jefferson's probably in the same spot, that he'll probably be very likely that he's cut, but almost equally likely that he'll be back for the first game of the year, mm-hmm. because the Ravens can use that flexibility to put a guy through to IR. And, you know, Williams might be one of those guys that they move through to IR. If they need him later in the season, they activate him. And they'll find a reason why he's moderately hurt, because, hey, everybody goes through camp and they're a little hurt, right?
Yeah. You know, you're going to have a little sprained ankle or something going on. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the way the Ravens manipulate the roster is, I mean, I don't follow every other team's, you know, as closely, but I follow other teams pretty closely, and I don't think any other team does it better than they do. Maybe New England might be the only one that could hold a candle to them. But that makes a lot of sense, and it depends how well he shows in camp and if they think that if he's ready. If he's ready, I think they'd have him ready in week one. And if not, it's almost like an insurance policy for the midseason when somebody else has a minor injury, but they can do a little bit better.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, let's hear a great season from you.
So a great season is he just displays the mirroring ability where they trust him against the shifty type of slot receivers, because that's one specific function that they don't necessarily have a corner that has completely solidified that role right now. And if he can do that, I think he would be the starting slot against specific teams. Buffalo comes to mind as a team that runs a lot of 10, and they have they're going to have Jameson Crowder as one slot with Gabriel Davis on the outside, one side, Stephon Diggs on the outside, and then their return man, Isaiah McKenzie, will be their other slot. So you're going to need essentially two slot receivers against Buffalo. So that would be a team where I think his skill set would be very valuable to the Ravens. And there are others as well. Just wanted to highlight them. Most of all, just shows the ability to be a long-term solution as a starting slot cornerback. It is a very important position on the defense. I'd argue that it's more important than, starting Mike at this point, in my view. So if they can have, a rookie who comes in and shows that ability in year one, then you have him on a very team-friendly contract for the next 3 years. Of course, they have that proven performance escalator. But still, if he's your starting slot, he's well worth that money. That would be a great season.
Yeah, I agree. That's you've laid it out very well. To me, to be a great season, he wins the slot corner job coming out of camp. And you can talk about it being a matchup game, and I think it's more of a matchup by offensive package. So my requirement is that anytime the other team forces the nickel with three wide receivers, forces the standard nickel as opposed to the big nickel. By the way, just as an aside here, big nickel is a huge anti-12 personnel package. It's also, you can use it in some 11 personnel when the receiver in the slot tends to be a really big guy, Kelvin Benjamin and guys like that who teams try and play big. Then it'd be great to have Kyle Hamilton lined up opposite him. But if the receiver is normal size or fun size, then I want to have Damarrion Williams lined up opposite him if Damarrion Williams is having a great year and hopefully doesn't lose. He's not a player who at his age can afford to lose any time to injuries. So he needs to hit the ground running as you said in 2023. And I think that if he has at least an adequate year in coverage and we have the hope of progression in 2023 based on what we've seen, I think that would be a great year.
Absolutely. Absolutely agree. So the Ravens have sometimes these players who were a little bit surprised that they choose where they choose. At least anecdotally, have a pretty good track record of hitting on those guys.
Voss, absolutely outstanding talking football with you. This is a very dense conversation, even though you're extremely terse as a commentator. We have an opportunity to talk for almost an hour here about two players who are kind of on the fringe of the Ravens roster in some way. Both of them are going to make it, in my opinion, but they're both guys who may or may not be activated every single game and you still get a very good solid hour of discussion. Voss Lerikos, a member of the Baltimore Beatdown, but tell folks where they can talk football with you.
Yes. So I'm co-managing editor at Baltimore Beatdown. You can also find me on Twitter at Vasilis Beatdown, Vasilis Beatdown. Been having some fun with the Twitter spaces on a semi-weekly basis and really just enjoy talking football 12 months a year, 365 days, Ravens football.
All right. Outstanding. Voss, one of the real friends of the show. Always happy to have him on. Always one of the first guys I go to with a new series. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up, DM on Twitter. They're always open, and I want to hear from you. We've had some great new ideas for shows come out over the course of the last month, and I'm looking for material in July. There's an opportunity. There's an opening at the mic, and I'd like it to be yours. I'll get back to you very quickly, I promise, and looking always to meet new friends via Twitter and via other social media platforms who want to talk Ravens football. Voss, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.